Good afternoon. Welcome on into Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's Tuesday, the 24th of January. It's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Marion Ryan. She's Consumer Tax Manager at TaxBack.com. Over 300,000 people have yet to claim their next tax credit for renters, and she'll be telling us all how you can do that. We'll be speaking to Brian Mooney. He's a guidance counsellor and education columnist at the Irish Times. He'll be giving us tips on how to find the right college course for you or your child. And of course, the mocks begin soon, so I'm sure that is weighing on people's minds. Then we'll be speaking to Shane O'Donoghue. He's the editor of CompleteCard.ie. 52.9% pass rate at the driving test centre in Naas in 2022. It is below the national average, and there is a test centre in Cork that is tipping around 75% pass rate. So he'll be telling us why. And at 2:45, we'll be speaking to Therese McCullough Melia. She's the founder of Etiquette Academy of Ireland, and she'll be telling us how we can improve our social etiquette this year and what are the do's and don'ts. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, you know what to do.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, only a fraction of the number of people who are eligible for the new rent credit have claimed it. Just 78,000 renters have so far claimed the credit, which was announced in the last budget. And I'm joined now on the line by Marion Ryan. She's a consumer tax manager at TaxBack.com. Good afternoon, Marion.
Hi, Caoimhe.
Marion, why is it such a small uptake at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose it's a good news story. I suppose that there's 400,000 people that might be eligible for the credit. So I suppose there's about 300,000 people that should be claiming it. People aren't aware of it, I think, because it was introduced in the budget there back in September. And what's a little bit unusual about it is that it was introduced retrospective. So it was introduced in the year of 2022, which means the only way that people can get the benefit of it is actually filing a tax return and claiming back that refund. But it's a huge refund for people. It's a value of €500 per person. Or if you're a married couple, there it's €1,000 of a refund that you can get back for yourself there. So I just think people aren't aware that it was, I think they know that there's a rent tax credit, but they just assumed, like the rest of the budgetary measures, that they were kicking in place in January. But that's not the case. You can actually get it for last year, for 2022.
Yeah, so if you were renting last year, you can claim this. And I think the great thing about this as well is that it applies to each room. So say you're a group of lads in a house and there's five rooms, each person is eligible for the €500 tax back. Isn't that right, Mary?
Yeah, it's a really nice way. Yeah, if you're in a house share situation, as you mentioned there, if there's five of you renting together, each of you individually are entitled to claim the tax credit. That's €500 each. And another thing that's good about it, the rent tax credit was here before, years ago, and then during the austerity years it was phased out and removed. In the new version of the rent tax credit, if you're a parent and you're paying for rent for your child in college, you're also eligible to claim the rent tax credit. So it's a nice kind of, it's a nice thing there for parents. I suppose the rent that they're paying for kids in college is huge, so they're eligible to claim that now. Okay. As well, or if it's a case that maybe, say, if you've home, you live in Tipperary and you have to work in Dublin, you have to rent a house in Dublin as well there, you're also eligible to claim it there. So there's a huge cohort of people that are entitled to it. So what I would always say is, if you're paying rent, check and see, get in touch with us, ask us if it's something that you can. Now, there's a few kind of exceptions to the rule. So I suppose you can't claim it if it's the case that you're in receipt of some sort of a housing benefit. So say, unfortunately, if you're in receipt of the HAP, if you're part of the HAP scheme there, you're not going to be able to claim it there. So any kind of one that's got a government support already, you can't claim the tax credit.
Okay, but if parents have, say, two, three, four children in college and they're paying rent, they can claim for each child, can they?
No, unfortunately not. No, you could just get the capped on it there. So you'd get the €1,000 would be the max that the parents would be able to claim back there. But I suppose if it is the case that you do have two or three or four children in college, I know it's kind of off topic here, but there's tuition fee relief that you may be able to claim if you've got a couple of kids in college that you're paying fees for at the same time. So there's probably another area that we might be able to get something back for people.
Okay, so is it difficult to file a tax return? Because I think a lot of people, especially if you just work in a job where your taxes come out and you're not self-employed, a lot of people may not have done it before, Marion.
Absolutely. We find here 2 out of 3 people aren't claiming the tax refunds that they're entitled to. And it's for a few reasons. The first one, I suppose, is that you said that there's a level of kind of apathy, and we kind of assume our employer is looking after everything for us and we're taxed correctly, which is correct and right to a certain extent. But things like that, your rent tax credit, your medical expenses, if you tuition fees, all these things that you get a refund for, so all the nice things that are there, your employer can't look after that there. So there's going to be refunds for you. So you do need to file your tax return. The second reason a lot of people don't is they have the fear. The fear of the taxman, the fear of the tax office. What if I'm going to end up owing something there? And that puts off a huge amount of people there. And there's millions of euros left unclaimed just by people being fearful. So I suppose if it is a thing that you are fearful of it and you don't know what buttons to press on the revenue website, get in touch with someone like ourselves there, where we can help you out and kind of get it back for you there. It's your money, like, don't leave it behind. That's what we always say to people.
Definitely good advice there, Marian. And I suppose just staying on, like, just general tax credits, because, you know, everyone is really struggling at the moment, I'm sure, and they're trying to save money wherever they can. Like, for example, if you work in a job where, let's say, you're a jockey, or maybe you're an electrician, or, you know, you need certain things, let's say you need a saddle or you need certain boots or whatever, you can put those off as your tax as well, Marian, can't you?
Yeah. So there's a thing called a flat rate expense, and people probably roll their eyes and go, what in the name of God is she talking about when she says flat rate expense? So it's a tax credit, tax relief that you're entitled to based solely on your occupation. And there's over 180 different occupations that are entitled to it. And it's a set amount that you get each year. And it could be really nice. So, like, it's people, like, if you're working as a shop assistant in retail, you mentioned electricians there. If you are working in the health service, so if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse or someone like that, if you're a teacher, there's, as I said, there's 180 different types of ones there, flat rate expense. It's really important. And as I said, it's based just on your occupation. So if you tell us you're working as a shop assistant in retail, we can claim that for you. That's €121 per year. If it's the case that maybe you're a really talented musician and you're in the National Symphony Orchestra, it's over €2,500 a year. Now, I'm giving kind of two ends of the scale there, just you can get the end of it there. Like, there's not a huge amount of people in the Symphony Orchestra, but like that, it's a building block to refund for people. And a lot of people as well overlook the simple things like their medical expenses and like your prescription fees. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's only 10 or 15 euros a month, but that over the space of 12 months for your family, and then we can go back 4 years, so that over the space of 4 years, it all adds up, and they're all, we call them building blocks. So everything's a building block there to get a better refund for yourself.
Yeah, so, like, basically just keep your receipts, keep anything like that, and then go to yourselves and you can file it all for them and help people to do that.
Yeah, and what we always say to people is anytime that there's a major life event, there's always usually kind of a taxable impact at the end of it. And when I say that, there's, like, if you get married, if unfortunately, if you get divorced, there's going to be tax impact on that there. Generally, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, that triggers a refund. If it's the case you become a single parent there, or if you become a carer or something like that, again, there's tax credit all the way along for those kind of things. So anytime you have a major life event, I always say to people, think tax and think tax refund at that as well there, because it generally does tax trigger refunds for people there. So bear that in mind as well. Keep all your receipts, and if you have a change in circumstances as well, have your taxes reviewed for that year.
Okay, and what would you say the biggest mistake you see people make, Marian?
Assuming that they're not going to be due something back. Other than that, then, a lot of people do. We would have people coming to us that maybe they've applied directly to tax office and they're after getting a fright because they get told that they owe €1,600 or something like that. Usually when we look at it there, it's been a case that maybe they haven't ticked a box that they're supposed to take on when they're filling in their tax return there and stuff like that. So I suppose try and educate yourself as best you can and always ask questions. Like, I know sometimes I say, we feel like the tax office is a big bad wolf. They're not really. So if you do ask a question, they are generally helpful in answering there. But suppose what they're not going to do is they're not going to run down the road after us and tell us, they come here, I think I owe you some money there. So it is up to ourselves to be proactive and get a little bit more tax savvy.
Okay, so if someone has gone on to the revenue website and it's come back that they owe money, you're saying they might not owe money at all. They might have just done the wrong thing, clicked the wrong box.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and if someone is like that, feel free to get in touch with ourselves there and we can have a look at it. Your worst case scenario is that we come back and go, look, actually what the tax office has said is correct. But 9 times out of 10 we go, oh, look, actually, no, there was a mistake there along the way. We can get that fixed.
Okay.
Right there and get that stress taken away for people.
And Marian, like, if someone owes 1600, they don't have to pay it straight away anyway, do they? Like, they can pay it over time, isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly. So generally what the tax office do, the only people that will have to pay a bill up front is usually the people that have a tax return to self-employed and stuff like that. So what they'll do is they'll reduce your tax credit over a number of years, so you can contact them and they can bring down over the next 4 or 5 years, which means every week you'll be paying a little bit more tax, but it just takes the sting out of it a little bit for people there. But I would like to stress, like, it's very rare that people would have underpayments, and it's even more rare that they'd have one of about €1,600, but just not to be frightening your listeners today throwing that figure out there, I suppose, just to bear in mind the fact that there is the millions that are left unclaimed there for last year. And if it's a thing you've never looked into your tax before, it really is worthwhile talking to someone and looking into it.
Okay, so the advice there to any of the Kildare listeners listening in is to contact taxback.com, I suppose, and see what you are entitled to. And of course, there is over 300,000 people who have yet to claim the new tax credit for renters. If you're even renting a room in a house, you are eligible for the €500 tax back. The only exception to that, Marion, is if your landlord isn't registered with the RTB, isn't that right?
Yes and no. So it may be, the RTB is one of the requirements there, but there may be a cohort of landlords out there as well that are availing of what's called the rent to room scheme. I don't know if we spoke about it before. It's a really nice scheme actually for people where you can actually rent out a room in your home and earn up to €14,000 in a year tax free. You don't have to pay any tax on it. So if it's the case that your landlord is in that scheme there, they don't have to register with the RTB, but you can still claim the tax credit there. So again, if you're renting, ask the question to us. Don't assume that you're not entitled to it. And a lot of people assume as well, oh, I'm paying cash to my landlord, maybe I can't claim it there. So again, check with us there and we can see if there's any way at all that we can get the credit for you.
Okay, well, that's great advice there from Marion Ryan, Consumer Tax Manager at taxback.com, with all of the advice on how to get your money back and claim what you are owed. 300,000 people still to claim back the next tax credit for renters, which is €500. So if you do think you're eligible, you should get on to taxback.com. Thanks very much to Marion.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, what do you want to do after you complete the Leaving Cert? Well, it seems like a simple question maybe to some, and some out there may be in their 30s, 40s or 50s and they still don't know what to do. So we have Brian Mooney here, guidance counsellor and education columnist with the Irish Times, to answer all of the burning questions. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Brian, it's sometimes unfair, I think, to ask a 17 or 18-year-old what they want to do for the rest of their life, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's a completely ludicrous question. Because if any of us look back on our life as adults and we look and say, had we made all those decisions at 17, we hadn't made none of them. All anybody should ever ask to any individual, whether you're a Leaving Cert or whether you're in your 20s or your 30s or even, you know, at my age, you ask, what is the next appropriate step? What is the next appropriate step for you in relation to your career progression, whether it's to go into a course, whether it's to do an apprenticeship, whether it's to do a work experience, to figure out whether, in fact, you are suitable for a particular course, whether it's to do a further education course for a year to actually test the particular area and see is it really for you. Or if you're in midlife, you know, is there something you could return to education to increase your skills that would enable you to do something you now realise you'd love to do, but you didn't realise it at the time you got your job when you left school. So it's the next step is the only one that really matters, and it's getting that right that is the important question at the moment for everybody who's considering education or training in the next 12 months.
Okay, so if we stick for, let's say, for argument's sake, the Leaving Certs, because obviously the mocks are coming up.
They're the biggest ones,
obviously, that are going to be wondering what to do. And I'm sure some might feel under pressure from their parents or teachers or whatever to pick a course. What's the next step, I suppose, if they genuinely have no clue?
Let's look at the mechanics of the CAO for a minute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Applicants to the CAO have until the 1st of February to list their courses, okay? Now, that seems like, oh my God, panic, less than a week. Relax. All that means is that for those who are adults, that is over 23 years of age, or for those who are applying for a course where there's a portfolio requirement or an interview requirement, so you're talking about music, art, you know, anything where you have to either perform or present a portfolio, they should be listed by the 1st of February. Now, if you forget one, the CAO, at the cost of €10, will allow you to add one during the month of February. So relax. If you are not over 23 years of age, i.e. you're currently doing the Leaving Cert, and you are not considering a course where you're going to need a portfolio, or you're going to have to stand up and dance or sing or do something as part of a performance to get into the course, the real deadline, the one that actually matters, is not until about 10 days after you finish your Leaving Cert, which is the 1st of July coming. So what you need to do now is you need to make sure your application is, I'm sure a vast majority of people have done so. If you haven't done so, you have until the 1st of February, €45 to get in an application now. After that, there is what's known as here and there, that is disadvantage or disability, where you might be able to get in on lower points than the required points for everybody else. They have to be ticked on your CO application by the 1st of February. There's an online section which has to be filled in by the 1st of March. And there is often paperwork, consultant reports, family income statements and all that sort of thing that are physical documents. And they have to be in the CO office in Galway by the 15th of March. They are the only deadlines that are current and the ones that are pressing. The actual deadline for most Leaving Cert students who are not looking at restricted application courses, they can list courses now, but the real deadline is the 1st of July. What the deadline for the 1st of February, to me, it's like the equivalent of a date, whereas the equivalent of the 1st of July is like a marriage proposal. It's like the difference between something very temporary and, you know, casual, and something that is absolutely rocked solid and can't be changed. So if I was very anxious now, I'd put down what I thought I wanted, and then I would do my research, going on to Qualifax, looking at all the courses that are available throughout the country at PLC level, at undergraduate level. I might go onto the Careers Portal website and do their really good interest inventory and see what kind of courses that might be directing me towards. I do my research over the next couple of months. And then when the whole thing is over at the end of June, around the 20th of June, I'd sit down in those 10 days that when everything is finished, when I am no longer under pressure, I've no more exams to prepare for, and I'd ask myself that question we talked about at the beginning of this piece, what is the next right appropriate step for me in terms of my career journey? And if you've done your research well, and you've gone and visited the various colleges and looked at the progression opportunities, you'll probably find that you'll know what would be your first choice, your second, your third, right down to your 10th choice. And yes, you should use the level 6, 7 courses as backup. Yes, you should look at doing a PLC course, or at least have the option of doing one as another backup. Yes, you should look at apprenticeships today, because there are over 60 of them, and they are right throughout the economy in areas as diverse as financial services, the farm chem sector, you know, insurance, taxation, as well as the construction industry and motor trade and the ones that have traditionally been there. And if you do your research properly, at the end of the day, using your own gut instinct, when you get to make that final decision, you'll probably find that it will come naturally to you.
Okay, so like, there's going to be people who sit the mocks and they fall way short of what they think they need in regards to points, etc. I'm sure you see this all the time, Brian.
I do, yes.
Give us an example of a course that people all, you know, want to do and they're the back door into it, let's say. Because I know there's so many.
There are a number of backdoors. You know, I chair a number of boards of management of colleges, further education colleges, one in Blackrock in Dublin, one in Stillorgan in Dublin. And we would have students every single year that would do pre-law or pre-business, or a lot of students go out to Bray and do pre-science. And they would be doing a PLC for a year. And if they do well in their PLC, I've had students who might have, you know, quite modest points, 300-400 points, getting into science in UCD or science in Trinity or law in UCD or commerce in UCD or BESS in Trinity. So effectively, there is always a route from further education into high point courses. There is also a route from 6-7 courses into level 8 courses. So for instance, if a student was interested in doing a commerce stroke business degree and was hoping, for instance, maybe to go to Technological University Dublin, which was the DIT in the past, they could obviously list the Level 8 business management course there as their first choice on Level 8, but then it could also list the Level 6 course at business management in TUD, which is about 100 points less. And then if they do well in that over 2 years, they transfer to the Level 8. So there's routes in from Level 6, 7 to Level 8, and there's routes in from PLC to Level 8.
Okay, so people shouldn't panic. There's a route into
Absolutely
everything.
Not. There's a route to everything. And as well as that, for some students and a growing number of students, they are looking at courses taught through English in continental European universities, particularly in the Netherlands, where they don't look for points. They look for what we used to look for when I was very young, and that is matriculation, which is basically two H5s and four passes in the Leaving Cert, and they might put in a minimum points requirement of 200 or 300 points, you know, as an absolute floor. Hmm. But other than that, the fees over there are around €2,000, which is pretty much what they are here this year, because Minister Harris has cut the fees here by 1,000. And effectively, you can get an absolute top-of-the-range degree through English, and we have thousands of Irish students now taking that route to the continent in areas like physiotherapy, psychology, business degrees, hotel management degrees, where effectively the points here might be beyond them, but they can get in there with their basic matriculation requirements, as long as they've got at least maybe 300 points in some cases.
Okay. Just talk to us a little bit about the apprenticeships, Brian, because I know it's new this year. If people are interested in doing them, how does it work with CAO?
Okay. The apprenticeship is a system whereby the key is the employer. If, in fact, you are interested in a particular area, the first thing you need to find out is there an apprenticeship. You'll find that out on the Sulis website, www.sulis.ie. So you go to the Sulis website and you click on apprenticeships and you look at the whole range of apprenticeships. Now, they are the registering body for those apprenticeships, but the only person who can register for your apprenticeship is an employer who is recognised by Sulis as qualified in that area. So a qualified electrician, a qualified plumber, a qualified insurance company where there is a particular program for insurance apprenticeships or whatever. And then the question is, will that employer be prepared to offer you that apprenticeship over 3-4 years, whatever? Some of these apprenticeships, you end up with a qualification like a trade. Some of them actually now have degrees associated with it. So there is a level 8 degree in insurance, which is through Sligo, through what was the IT in Sligo, which is now the Technological University. There are some of these apprenticeship programs where you could literally take it on to a PhD and doctoral level. But the key is know where the apprenticeships are through the Sulis website and then find the relevant employer who must offer you the apprenticeship, but then they register you with Sulis and then away you go. You're in college for some training and you're with the employer and you're being paid from day one. So it's a very, very effective way of earning and learning.
Yeah, it's great, the apprenticeships that you can get paid straight away. That is Brian Mooney there, guidance counsellor and education columnist with the Irish Times, giving us some great tips on how to find the right college course for you and, of course, PLC or apprenticeships there too. So thanks very much to Brian for his time. There has been some revealing today about the driving tests, and it has been revealed that the pass rate for learner drivers in a driving test centre in Cork was nearly twice as high as one in Dublin last year. Here in Kildare, the driving test centre in Naas, we had a 52.9% pass rate, which was below the national average, which stands at 53.2%. Why the big differences in different test centres, we don't know, but Shane O'Donoghue is on the line to tell us why. He's editor of CompleteCar.ie. Good afternoon, Shane.
Hi, Cleve, how are you?
Shane, you're seeing a big difference between, I suppose, the rural test centres and the urban test centres, aren't we?
Yeah, I think if you look at the data, that definitely seems to be one of the trends you can pick out of it. We'd like to see full in detail demographics, which might paint the picture even better for us. But I think even looking at that, that says something, doesn't it?
It definitely does. So like Ballincollig in Cork, 75.3%, which was the highest in the country there. And then the two Dublin test centres were well below that, nearly half of that, Shane, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that in itself is kind of surprising, that Ballincollig almost seems like an outlier, because Ballincollig in Cork is quite a built-up area. It's a very big residential area. I guess it's not a city centre as such, but there's still a lot of people living there. I mean, my theory is, and it is only a theory, I'm afraid, is that it's just more difficult to pass in a built-up area. You know, people might not be so familiar with the junctions, they might have come from further away in a different part of the city and just might not know that part of the city where the testing goes on. Whereas in smaller areas, and in Kildare as well, like you mentioned there, 52.9% pass rate, People are probably a bit more familiar where the testing goes on, and you know they probably drive those roads regularly anyway, and they are more familiar with the junctions. And I think that's possibly where people are being tripped up in the bigger urban areas.
Yeah, definitely, because I would probably agree with you there, Shane. Like when I did my test, I did it in Naas, and I'm just from outside of Naas. So when I did my lessons, it was always in Naas. When I drove that road, it was the same road that I had driven on every single lesson. Whereas that's not always the case for a lot of people who sit their driving test, is it?
No, not at all. And I think it is more likely the case in smaller areas or perhaps where there are less test centres. But I mean, you mentioned Dublin there, and you know, there's quite a few centres around Dublin, and it's probably, I'm guessing that people choose availability and timings of the test rather than the local centre at all times. And, you know, when there's a lot more traffic around and the junctions are unfamiliar, I think it's just much harder for somebody who's probably already nervous already going into a test.
Yeah, definitely. So the two test centres in Dublin with the low pass rates were one in Mulhuddard, 38%, and then Charlestown at 39%. Like, we hear it all the time, Shane. I know I had friends who, you know, failed a few times in Naas and then went to like somewhere down the country and they passed straight away. So, you know, and they wouldn't have been familiar with those roads. Is it that there's less, you know, I suppose, obstacles, there's not as many schools, there's not people running out in front of your car because they're quieter places?
I think that's an interesting point there. Busyness of the traffic is probably a big factor. And busy junctions, you know, whatever about just people around. I think more cars on the road to deal with, especially when it comes to the junctions that you're being tested on. That could be a factor. I'd also really like to see demographics, as I mentioned, but perhaps the testers are just more lenient. I mean, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be variable. They should be consistent across the country. But, I mean, anecdotally, if there are people failing in one area and then going to another area that they're familiar with and they're passing, you'd have to wonder about that. Maybe that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say it, Shane, but now that you have it, I'm happy that you did. Yeah, I mean, they obviously have a criteria that they have to follow, but is it strictly followed, as in, you know, there's a certain box and if you do something wrong, you get a mark or whatever. I think you're allowed to get 5 marks, isn't it, before you fail. So do you think that maybe testers vary from town to town?
Yeah, they shouldn't do, as you said. I mean, there is a set schedule and a set way of doing things, but I guess there is, you know, there's a human factor there. Different testers will be looking, maybe they're, you know, more focused on other things like road safety and more important bits and pieces than, you know, how good you can parallel park, how well you can parallel park, etc. So there is a human factor there, and that's, there's no doubt about that. But I think somebody needs to do a freedom of information request and get the demographics for this, because I think that will give us a very interesting story.
Yeah, definitely. It's so interesting. And I'd love to know if there's anyone listening in. How many times did you have to sit your driving test before you passed 0833 97 97 97? I have to say, I'm very proud of myself. I've passed mine first time round, and I sat it on the Friday, Shane, of Punchestown Festival. And it was 2 o'clock and there was buses everywhere and there was cars everywhere and people. But I knew I was grand, because once I came in, I was at a junction and the tester turned to me and he said, "Are you heading out to the races today?" And I said, yeah, I am. So I knew I was home and dry. I knew I'd pass at that stage, Shane. So I was happy with that. But I'd be interested in the Kildare area. Let me know, where did you sit your test and did you pass first time? Shane O'Donoghue there, editor of CompleteCar.ie, with the news that a 52.9% pass rate at the driving test centre in Naas for last year. So thanks very much, Shane.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, I have a few texts in here to 0833 97 97 97, and one guy says, "How important is this topic for parents of children? Because I felt so under pressure to pick a course by mine, and they tried to influence what I picked, even though they wanted me to pick courses I didn't want for myself." And unfortunately, that does kind of happen with parents. You know, maybe they always wanted to be a nurse and they want their daughter to be a nurse or whatever, a doctor. And look, I know most parents, in fairness, are you know, they mean well, but it's obviously not an ideal situation to be pushing your children into a course that they don't want to do. I also have a message in from Teresa here. She said, I decided to do my driving test in Tala because that's where I grew up, and I thought I'd know every inch of it. Was totally shocked as the place had changed so much. Don't think you're supposed to talk to the tester, but I found myself rabbiting on to him about how everything had changed past first time. Gift of the gab there, Teresa. Like myself, I knew I was home and dry when my one started. My tester started talking to me. I have another text in here to 0833 97 97 97, and this man says that he sat his test in NACE twice, failed, went to Dundalk, and then he passed. Which, to be fair, I'm looking at the rates for Dundalk here, 56.9% pass rate, not much more than NACE, only about 3 or 4%. So I suppose, look, maybe sometimes you just get lucky, I'm not sure, but I suppose we just need to do a little bit more research into why certain places are passing and certain places aren't. But we're changing tack a small bit now, and I'm joined on the line by Therese McCullough Melia. She's the founder of Etiquette Academy of Ireland, and she'll be telling us how we can improve our social etiquette this year and what we should do and what we shouldn't do, because there has been a recent research saying that you should be using the correct pronouns, removing ear pods when you're talking to people, and the big one, and I have to say it does annoy me, not leaving long voice notes. So yeah, that is a good one. Good afternoon, Therese.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. How are you?
Not too bad, Therese. There's a few here that says the does. Do hold the door open for everyone. Would you?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's really important. You know, it respects other people, like the person that's coming behind. There's nothing worse than if you're reaching a door and someone just lets it slap in your face. So it's always nice, irrespective of what sex the person is, just the next person that's coming through the door to hold it for them.
Okay, so whether you're a man or a woman should
exactly.
hold the door open for a man. Okay.
Exactly. We live in an equal society.
I'm just wondering, Therese. Do write thank you letters. Is this quite common still? Or I'd say most people probably don't anymore.
No, unfortunately not. It is lovely to receive a thank you letter. But the thing is, what's acceptable today is even just to send a text message to acknowledge that you have received a gift. The terrible thing is, you know, when you send gifts, especially through the post or whatever, you're always there wondering if you never hear anything, did they actually ever receive it? And an interesting thing, it was just a Christmas card that took coming from County Derry to Mullingar. It took from the 13th of December until yesterday to arrive. So I'm thinking if you had gifts out there that could be circulating and may turn up a long time after Christmas, but it's still nice for the person to know that you acknowledge it. Just send a little text. Even if you don't like the gift, by the way, and you don't tell them you don't.
That's probably a good one. Yeah, don't tell them that you don't like the gift. Do you use Mrs. and Mr.? Is this common? Because honestly, I don't know anyone who uses Mr. and Mrs. anymore.
In Ireland, it's very uncommon. The only thing I would actually, if I was addressing an older person, I would call them Mr. or Mrs. And then they would normally come back and say, oh no, call me Joe or call me Mary. And then that's fine. But it's just kind of just a respectful thing that if they're older people, they would have grown up in a time when everybody addressed strangers or even their neighbours by Mr. and Mrs.
Yeah, definitely. I remember like my grandparents maybe would have been referred to as like, you know, Mrs. Harney or Mrs. Bennett or something like that. But nowadays it's kind of, people don't really do it. Although it seems to be kind of an Irish thing, because out in the States or even in different countries, you know, they still say sir and ma'am when they address people.
Oh, yes. No, Ireland, it's very relaxed altogether. I even see parents or children now don't even call their grandparents granny or granddad anymore. They call them by their first name. So that's how far down the road we've gone. But no, it's just nice and respectful to call an older person, Mr. and Mrs. And then, as I say, they can give you permission to call them by their first name.
Okay, yeah. And do improve your communication skills. What does that mean then, Therese?
Oh, well, since the pandemic, I'm afraid our communication skills have kind of fallen by the wayside. We're no longer, looking for body language or eye contact. We've lost all that. And on top of that, small talk, like having a conversation with somebody. And we always kind of, the rules we would always say would be, when you meet somebody, like two questions. you ask them, like, how are they, or how was their day, and then you follow it up with another question. But mind that it's not too personal, because people sometimes can ask extremely personal questions of somebody, and you're sometimes shocked, thinking, oh my goodness, they didn't seriously ask that person that question. So just to be mindful of that. And communication, you see, because we were all kind of honed up and at home, that we've kind of just lost. And another thing that we've lost as well is our listening skills. We're kind of in a bubble of our own, and we never stop to, you know, listen to what somebody else is saying. And listening skills are so important, because you never know what nuggets of information you may have lost out on by not listening.
Yeah, and I read something recently, and it said, don't always look, think about the story that you have to follow up on the story that's being told. Just listen to what the person is saying. And I think it's exactly something that people don't really do as much. Now,
no.
The next one, Therese, I definitely don't adhere to it. Do stick to traditional dress codes and dress smart at work. I think, in fairness, the lads in here would tell you that I don't dress great for work. But in fairness, I was never working at home much. I'm always in the office. So, you know, people can't see me on the radio, Therese, you know?
No, that's quite true. Unless someone has a video in, and then you kind of sometimes are shocked when you see, oh my goodness. It's like one of our politicians was caught doing a Zoom meeting without his trousers from the European Parliament, and it didn't look too good, believe me. But it's always nice. And I think even when you, especially for people that are meeting the public and all of that, I've always had a thing about that. Even in companies that I worked in, I'd always be saying, like, you know, we need to kind of smarten up our dress, especially when we're meeting the public. It gives a more professional look. It's like if somebody, I often say it's students, you know, if I came in here now with my jacket all unbuttoned wrong and like a lather in my stocking or whatever, you know, and came in to teach you, what would you be thinking? Oh, she's very professional. You'd be thinking, where is this lady going? So it's just from that point of view, it's nice just to dress, not OTT, but just dress nice.
Yeah, in fairness, and you do always feel better when you're well dressed up. I know
you do,
I do.
Yeah.
Exactly. People have become a little bit more relaxed after the pandemic, haven't they?
They have, yes, they have. And even when you're in shopping now, there's, you know, it's not more casual clothes that are in the shops rather than more dressy. You know, I was just looking for a dress there coming up to Christmas, and I was thinking, oh my goodness, they've so few, because normally when you go in, there'd be lines of them. There was only just a small line, and most of it was all cashwear. So that has happened as a result of the pandemic. But, you know, and that's fine around your home, and, you know, as you say, you're in a position where you're not, you know, seen by the public. You just rock in and whatever, and that's fine. But if you're out in public, it is nice.
Trey's giving me the out there to not make the effort. Thanks for that one, Trey. Don't leave a meal before everyone has finished. And then I suppose just general etiquette around eating. Like, is it still a thing, you know, not to have your elbows on the table? And,
it is.
Yeah, okay.
Interestingly enough, I did an article with Kathy McGuinness there in The Independent last July. And they were looking at a survey that had been done. The 18 to 40-year-olds had reckoned, oh, this is all old hat, you know, all this manners at the table and whatever. But to be honest, it just makes you more comfortable if you're sitting with people that aren't, you know what I mean, like, as I often say, wolfing their food down, because you do find when they stick the elbows up and they're forking it into them, that you think, like, a famine has been declared, that they can't get the food in quickly enough. You know, it's just nice when people are nice and polite at the table. Mm. And, you know, it's like even using the proper knife and fork. Well, that's, you know what I mean? Most people now eat like the American way, which is fine. But if you're at a formal function, it's nice to know what cutlery to use, not to be sitting down there thinking, I wonder what this is all about, and having to wait until everybody picks up and you move on.
Yeah, definitely. In fairness, I was always taught good table manners, but I remember once going over when I was younger. I was about 13. I was in first year. So I had a new friend from Nace, and I went into her house, and I was served first because I was the guest.
Yeah.
And I didn't look up. I just looked down at the food and thought, oh, lovely. And I just started eating. And then I looked up and I realised all the rest of her family hadn't started eating because they were waiting for her mom to sit down so everyone could start together. And I was like, oh God. So I suppose, look, every family has different things, Trace, but it is...
Absolutely. I have all different rules and whatever,
Don't expect people to listen to long voice notes. Is this something that you see? It's kind of rude, is it, Trace?
It's not really practical. Like, you have to understand that people haven't got a whole lot of time to be listening to all these voice notes, because they're all time consuming. If somebody leaves a really long, long-winded message, you're there thinking, am I ever going to get the end of this? Shall I move on to the next one? And if you had a day like that, sure, the chances are you'd only get through half of the voice messages that you had.
And then don't talk with earpods in. I think that's fairly self-explanatory, isn't it? You should always have your ear ready to go to listen to people.
Yeah, to be listening again. And the other thing is, and I'm often guilty of this, when you meet somebody in the summer and you're wearing sunglasses, you really should remove the sunglasses. And I sometimes forget myself to do that. But it's just so they can see your eyes, that they, you know what I mean, that there's eye contact.
Okay.
So that's just another little one.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Well, that's Trace McCullough Melia there, founder of Etiquette Academy of Ireland, giving us some tips on how we can improve our social etiquette this year. And Trace giving me a few tips there on how I can improve and work and maybe make a bit more effort with my appearance. But thank you very much, Trace, for joining us there, and I'm sure we'll have you on again. That's all I have time for today. I have two quick messages that have come in here. Hi, Cuiva. I sat my test 7 times and failed each time. I made more mistakes but got luck by the 8th, and thank God done all my tests in NACE. They had great patience with me, so that's a good news story there, NACE. Hi Cuiva, I passed the CAR test at NACE test centre, and the tester I had was the nicest and fairest and most reasonable of all testers, and took 5 tests to pass, and that was back in 2008, and that's John in Clain. So thanks John for that. So it sounds like the testers in NACE are fairly nice. I thought my one was really nice too, so fair play to all the testers in NACE test centre for doing all that good work there, and anyone who's sitting their driving test today, we hope you pass. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.